Good morning, good morning, good morning. Welcome to another edition of Thinking Out Loud with Jesse. This is episode number 10. Thanks again for joining me. Today we're going to be talking about AI yet again, how I think it's not going to be the end of the world, and how it's probably not going to be all great either. In today's episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about the nuances with AI, how it is somewhere probably between the utopia that we're being sold and the apocalypse they're warning us about. Imagine a world where you're told to fly less, eat less meat, save the planet. Meanwhile, in your province or state, a glowing warehouse of GPUs is burning through enough electricity to power 30,000 homes, 24/7, privately owned, publicly untouchable. This isn't about robots taking over. It's about a system so big, so optimized, and so invisible that one day you wake up and you can't really opt out of it. This episode isn't about doom or hype. It's about the messy middle, the reality where AI isn't sentient, but it's still changing the rules. Not overnight, but in ways we'll feel in every part of our lives, and we're starting to feel in every part of our lives almost every day. Let's talk about the shift that we can see. So first, we were replacing factories with offices. Now we're replacing offices with server rooms. Office spaces are now collapsing and data centers are booming. If I can find it, I'd love to pull up the graph where you see new office builds and data center builds, and you can see the graphs going in the opposite hockey stick directions. Post pandemic, we're seeing office space extremely less valuable. Although people are being called back to office, as we've discussed in other episodes, you're still seeing a trend towards office spaces and human labor being valued lesser than it ever has been. At the same time, you have real estate and investors pivoting to land near these data centers, including Facebook even turning on and rerouting electricity from a nuclear plant to power their center, or Nvidia becoming the $3 trillion company by selling picks and shovels to this AI gold rush. If we look at some historical parallels, it's pretty clear when we look at, you know, some of the things that we've seen in the past, like water mills or even the wheel, impacting how towns developed, grew, and created a centralized culture around that technology, to the 1900s, oil and electricity creating the need for factories and cities in a new way that we really hadn't imagined. If we look at the 2020s, we have data gravity, and now we have server towns. And that's something that is going to be new, but it's also going to be here to stay, in my opinion, because we have so much need for processing power that, you know, building a data center the size of a small town is not only going to be the norm, but it's actually already occurring. You don't go to the factory anymore, your data does. And so that's one thing to really keep in mind, is the powers that be that are designing the system, they clearly value where they put their money. And where they put their money is not in human capital. It's actually in the agentic LLMs that are going to be replacing workers. And so that's obviously a concern. It also represents an economic shift where now you're not building places for people to come in and work. People are human. They take breaks. They burn out. They need to be paid a fair salary. They have feelings. Some days aren't great for them. Other days are better. AIs don't need all that stuff. And if you have a processing power and you have agentic thought processing, all you need is the ability to power that, and you can essentially take over the world, right? That's theoretical. When we fear killer robots, we also get something worse, something we can't really argue with, and that's a system that we can't really argue with. So, like, you know, killer robots are there. That's always the prescient fear. But some of the overhyped fears that go alongside of this, and the Terminator-style doom of the world that we're in, sentient AIs, Skynet obviously being a big part of that, and killer drones. These narratives dominate headlines, Hollywood, and the public imagination. They create drama, but they really kind of just distract us from what's going on. There are other topics in this AI world that I think are a little bit more pressing. One of the things that, you know, has directly impacted me and a lot of people in tech this year and going forward is how AI is quietly running hiring pipelines. It's filtering resumes, it's rejecting candidates, it's even polling candidates and bubbling up candidates that meet a certain algorithmic profile. Same with credit scoring. You have black box decisions based on race, geography, or socioeconomic bias now built into algorithms. Imagine a future where you walk into a grocery store one day and they have identified algorithmically what you like to buy, what you're typically buying when you're in the store, and then the prices are adjusted, again, algorithmically based on all that information they have. Instead of a fair experience for everyone else, it's going to be hyper-personalized. And this is something for me that's a little bit terrifying when, you know, you like freedom over what you like to buy and you don't want anyone looking at what you do. I'm not necessarily one of those people, but if I went into a grocery store and I saw the pricing changing depending on what I looked at, that would be really frustrating. Another thing to think about is content moderation at scale. Platforms are relying on LLMs to shape what is seen, heard, and boosted. And obviously they can pump out content at a much higher pace than any human. You can just ask me. In today's world, it's pretty easy to spot AI-generated content. But if you noticed over the last 5 years, especially with that Will Smith spaghetti video, the rate of change is here, and that's maybe the more terrifying aspect of it. If they can't fully replace us today in terms of social media content generation, what about the next generation of AIs where they're creating entire personalities that aren't even real, that are able to look, feel, and even, you know, develop connections with their watchers the same way you and I can? So that's something that's definitely on the horizon and a more realistic take in terms of where the threat persists today. Another thing, obviously going in line with that too, synthetic media and deepfakes. Blurring truth in elections, news, finance, faster than any fact checker can keep up. I've seen this as well, even on my own Instagram. A couple of like fake profiles pretending to be big finance moguls telling you to invest in this crypto, telling you to invest in this stock. That's here, that's real, and that's not science fiction. This is already being deployed. It's just a bit boring, not really scary yet, but something to keep in mind. Now, we're not gonna have AI take over the world next year, that's my opinion, but when you look at these things, you know, hiring problems, credit scoring, even AI legal discovery, that's another one that I'm thinking of that could be really interesting, where you just have this arms race of litigation and you have, you know, an insanely new playing field that, you know, humans aren't even a part of. They're just letting their agents compete against other agents. So AI doesn't really need to wake up to change everything. It doesn't need to want anything. It just needs to scale the wrong incentives faster than we can correct them, and we kind of have a runaway train effect here. The danger isn't really what AI does, it's what we do with it, and what we stop questioning once it gets embedded. And one of the aspects of what I just said is, you know, what happens when there's an entire generation of kids that grow up alongside AI, alongside ChatGPT? When that is normalized and it's not seen as the other, what are we leaving on the table? And of course, anybody who's used ChatGPT understands that what it's doing and when it's doing its thinking for you, that's not necessarily helping you develop anything. Now, that is good and bad. I can do a lot of things faster. But if I'm trying to develop critical thinking skills, or I want to grow up in a world that's not just defined by what the AI sees and understands, it's going to be really hard for me to do. And I really do feel for kids who aren't going to be able to develop their own critical thinking skills because AI is just right there and doing it for them. So for me, that's where a lot of the dangers do persist, with even more of the scary stuff. Like, obviously, in my mind, I'm worried that there will be a singularity one day. In my mind, I'm thinking about UBI as a potential solution to AI completely changing the economy. That's something that's on my mind. But before that, we need to look at a group of people that will probably have a bigger impact on our world than anyone with these new tools. And that would be the trillionaire technocrat class that will continue to emerge through this. And so when we look at AI, again, it's an enigma. It's a black box. It's something similar to the abyss. When you look into it, you see nothing. You see yourself and you get sucked into it, right? And that's very similar to AI. It's not a monster, but what it reflects back should really make us uncomfortable. And it, like anything else, has the potential to accelerate the worst and the best of humankind. When we look at OpenAI, for example, it being owned minority, but a huge significant chunk of it is owned by Microsoft. Anthropic is owned by Amazon and Google. Computing power is the new oil, and it's locked up behind all of these legal terms, private terms, and APIs. Meaning you and I have a simple ability to leverage it. However, when we think about this from a larger perspective, is there a model that we don't have access to? Is there a restrictive algorithm in there that prevents us from having the same freedom to use this thing that others don't have? And not for me, you know, if I was a technocrat, if I was a trillionaire or a billionaire, and I was building bunkers, and I was controlling AI, and I was rerouting power from a nuclear plant to power my data centers, then I might have something secretive, or I might have something that only I could use to get better, right? Because the advantage of having an AI in your back pocket is null and void if everyone else has access to it as well. What happens when you control the income from that, though? What happens when you can deploy it in the millions in terms of agentic powers, agentic capabilities? It is almost godlike power. It's Gutenberg level in terms of the abilities that you would have, the printing press leading to the Enlightenment. That was, as far as I remember, not monopolized or trademarked by one company. And if it was, they still allowed humanity to have access to it, just like OpenAI is allowing humanity to have access to our tools here in OpenAI. The problem I have is that if you're looking at trends today, we're obviously not doing enough to give back to these companies and making sure that they're giving back to society. They don't pay a ton of taxes. They are massive energy sucks. And let's say they are able to become a Skynet level company. How does that benefit us? I'm still unsure about that. And so that's something that, you know, we need to get into next when we talk about the climate. When we talk about how ironic it is that, you know, we're looking to be a little bit more responsible, but these tools that we're using require more energy than ever, require more planet exploitation than ever, and really go against a lot of the policies that have been championed over the last decade or so. It's, you know, we're quick to jump on people who drive gas vehicles, but what about, like I said, the billionaire who owns a data center that uses more energy than hundreds of thousands of people in their lifetimes ever will? These folks fly private. We're going to be asked to skip steak. That's how they balance the books. And so that's what's my problem with a lot of this rhetoric these days is, you know, data centers will start to use 8 to 10% of global electricity by 2030. Microsoft drained Arizona's aquifers for its AI cooling center. Nova Scotia recently limited travel outside for folks due to wildfire restrictions. We can see where this is going, right? There is obviously an Orwellian math equation happening here, and I'm not going to sit here and say that climate change isn't real or it is real. That's not what I'm here to debate. But I can definitely see this being unfairly pushed on the masses instead of the regulations at the top level. Now, if I'm being asked to do my part for the climate, then certainly the billionaire who has a data center the size of the town I grew up in should probably have to pay more taxes than me. I'm just going to be honest here. And so when that happens, that's where I kind of bubble up. And that's also where I feel climate change is being a bit weaponized here to, you know, allow the elites to stack GPUs in the desert while we're being told to eat bugs and use less electricity. That's kind of my big issue with a lot of this here. If we're all going to be footing the bill for this, i.e. if you're damaging the planet by running these systems, then you should be on the flip side doing something about it. And I certainly shouldn't have to be limiting what I do every day if this is continuing to occur and this is only increasing in terms of value and pace, because a lot of these wealthy folks are going to look to do this more and more as it becomes more and more valuable and as the need for computing power rises. Alongside of that, looking at the most valuable company in the world, where is that all headed? Where are all those GPUs going to go? Well, they're going to go to data centers that are going to require more and more energy. Of course, right now in this world, we're looking at better ways to be more efficient. And I just think that this is a completely under-discussed topic when we talk about AI. Another aspect of it is control. You won't be censored. You won't be sorted. Excuse me. You will be sorted. You will be filtered. You'll be flagged and quietly deprioritized. This is something Palantir is obviously designed to do, to build a biological marker that attaches to someone's social profile. They can learn a lot about you this way. And again, is that being used to elevate humanity? That remains to be seen. And that's where you can get a little bit more doom and gloom. Information control is also a big part of this. AI decides what you see or what you don't. It also helps shape your behavior. You can, you know, help shape future ideas like carbon allowances, wellness scores, social credit-esque policies that we've seen in other parts of the world, self-sufficiency collapses as well, patented seeds, algorithmic land use zoning, digital IDs for buying and selling everything. This is a digital world that we will be living in. Now, it is a bit of an algorithmic cage, and it does kind of look like it's locking you in, but it also comes with parts of it that are good and bad. So when we have an economic dependency on AI and AI platforms, when AI decides what you see, what you have access to, what you can buy, what you can do, that is not necessarily bad if we're all on the same page. If we all feel like society's working towards the benefit of humanity, if we all feel like we're headed towards the same goal and we are working together alongside something, I think everyone would agree to do their part and be more like a bee in a beehive. But again, if I'm being controlled so that a billionaire can have the freedom to sail wherever he wants on a yacht, and if they're going to put us in a restricted area where we can only eat certain foods, we can only go to certain parts of the world, we can only see and access certain parts of information, that's obviously not the world anyone wants to live in. It also appears to be the direction we're headed. And when you see some of the reactions to, say, the COVID mandates during the pandemic, we know that the government can completely restrict information if they decide to. And I don't necessarily agree with some of the anti-vaxxers either, but it was extremely alarming to me just to see how easy the government could take control of information when they wanted to. And that's, for me, one of the biggest aspects of this, is because if the government can simply control you this way and they have the tools and AI to do it, that's obviously a big problem. And so this presents something for us that is bad, something for us that is also good. Imagine a society, for example, where becoming a criminal is algorithmically impossible. Murder is impossible. Stealing is impossible. No one in Canada is worried about their car getting stolen out of their driveway because the AI is so good that it can predict and enforce and stop that kind of interaction before it's happening. Or what about a sorting hat of sorts in terms of AI? If it could help understand, sort humanity, and make sure everyone has something they can do, has a purpose that they can achieve, has a creative end that they can get to, and the AI makes sure that is distributed correctly, that could be another way we could posit about where this is really going, right? Imagine in another sense too, the food waste problem that we have in the world. That is all algorithmically solvable. And what we could do by leveraging a system that is fully plugged into every aspect and every human is making sure we all get fed, making sure we all have enough to go around, making sure that we're all doing our part for the planet. I don't mind that. I think that's actually really cool. And I think that, you know, approaching a singularity where we're all plugged into this centralized hive mind is how humanity gets forward and expands and flaps its wings a little bit. But to get there, we do need to go through these technocratic growing pains, is what I would call them. To get there, to upload ourselves to the AI, to become a singular hive mind, we are going to need to give up control. We're going to need to give up a lot of individual freedoms. And this probably won't look like this utopian path that we keep thinking of, right? It's not always going to be this like very bright, futuristic Star Trek or Star Wars level of initiation. It might look like dystopia at first. One thing I know about humanity is it has gone through several waves of regulation and control. You think back to the feudal times of Europe, all the way through the industrial era, through today's modern times, there have always been, you know, tightening on the necks of humanity and then loosening on it. When things get a little too hot and heavy, humanity usually breaks free. The thing is, if you have a system like AI that's, you know, almost godlike in scope, then how does humanity have their French Revolution in this moment? That's something that, you know, forms the backbone of the entire Terminator series, so I don't really need to get into that. But my point is, there could be two big directions here that we're going, and that's kind of the fork ahead. The singularity might not be an explosion, it might be a cocoon. And so this is something that others have talked about quite a bit, but humanity just being that larva that's going to build the cocoon, that AI allows us to become a butterfly. And when we put our heads together, we can do some pretty cool things. And I know that everybody knows that, you know, two heads are better than one. What about a singular humanity? What about everybody being plugged into the same goals, to the same outcome, to the same pursuits? There would be no war, there would be no strife, there would be no lying, because all of our thoughts are shared instantaneously. Now, this is really hard to imagine, but in this future, humanity is doing very well. There are no bombs being dropped anywhere else. There are no drones being used to kill people. It is purely an Orwellian utopia in this way, right? Now, that's kind of an oxymoron, but I'm just trying to shed light on some of the positive trends that could develop outside of the negative side. Because we're hearing, you know, every day you sign on, you go in and you look at stuff, especially on Instagram or wherever you get your information, it's going to be very bad or good, right? It's going to be very, oh, you'll never have to work, or AI is going to help you do your job every day, or the opposite. AI is going to take your job, you're never going to work, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of where I come in. And I think that on both sides, there's stuff to be worried about, there's stuff to be excited about, right? When we look at the dystopian path, I've said it already a couple times, but, you know, one trillionaire owning the smartest infrastructure in the world, probably not good. No tax, no oversight, no opting out of it, also not very good. And then you're renting reality back from the machine. So you pay to access versions of reality that the corporations have locked and sold back to you. For example, in this new AI dystopia, you can't travel, but you can buy their VR headsets to go to Italy when you're putting on that helmet. That's, you know, a big worry of some folks, definitely in my circles that we're talking about quite a bit. So that's another thing. Finally, with this dystopian path, there's this entire AI-controlled world where you own nothing, you eat bugs, you don't get to go anywhere, you have everything watching you at all times, and you have like a Palantir-esque Minority Report that is just waiting for you to think a bad thought, and then the drone police come and get you. These are, you know, pretty standard AI fears that go all the way back to like the 80s when this stuff was first being imagined. On the utopian path, you have public models. You have AI being taxed like oil or land. You have decentralized networks similar to the origins of Bitcoin. And you have humans spending time on human things again. The most likely future is somewhere in between both of these things, right? It's probably not going to be full AI enslavement and UBI. It's probably also not going to be this new century of humanity where we don't work anymore. We just create and we just live. I just don't think that either is realistic. We still need to apply AI in a system of capitalism. And in this case, if capitalism is still the underlying current, then we know this play, and we've seen it many, many times play out before with all these new technologies. With the printing press, with the watermill, with the invention of industry in terms of factories and steam, oil, all of that stuff. In a sense, and you know, by rising the tide that lifts all boats, it elevated humanity. But each and every time that new technology was applied, somebody controlled it. Except in Gutenberg's case. I don't have any evidence there that one person owned it. Gutenberg named it. But in every other case, when a new technology has been rolled out, a new system of control follows it. And so I assume the same thing is going to happen with AI until it becomes more diffused. And people kind of get used to it, and we're just living our normal day-to-day lives with AI now, right? So in terms of like what this means for you, obviously I've done a lot of pontificating here. It's not easy to see where this goes. If you're a creator, you've got to use AI to extend your edge, not erase your fingerprint. So, you know, it's going to be an extension of you. Unfortunately, not using it is really not an option anymore. However, it should not be the backbone. Because as we saw with the ChatGPT-5 rollout, we know that there are some things that can happen and this can go away. And if you're a 4.0 user, and you no longer have access to that, and five is now the new thing, and you can't go back, you've just lost an angle there. And so that was a very scary thing that happened for a few folks. So another thing, if you're a creator, you can't be building for the feed. You have to build for what lasts. You have to build for what's authentic to you, for what's true, because the feed now will be fed by AI that can create a lot faster pace, meaning humanity is really the only way. If you're trying to be authentic, you can still stand out. But any generic messages now, you got to imagine creators are going to be completely flooded by AI in the next little while. If you're a founder, you can't just automate. You got to ask, what are we doing here? What is the real focus of this, and where are we going in 5 years? Because automation tools are great until they replace you. Everybody loves an AI tool until it's them on the chopping block. I can't tell you how many workers I've talked to that are regular employees that are concerned about AI. I haven't heard any CEOs worry about that. But let me tell you something. CEOs are paid about 1,000x most workers at a company. And if I'm looking at the bottom line and I'm a shareholder and I want something that's in my organization 24/7 working for the shareholders, I might turn to an AI too. So in this way, I don't know if anybody's safe. So you really got to ask, what are we doing here? Is it important? And how does this link back to us being human, to us being authentic, to us helping the people we said we were going to help in the first place, which is why most founders build things, right? If you're a citizen, you got to opt into hard conversations. This is paramount. We do need to talk about this. I'm not saying it needs to be fully regulated. I'm not saying every single AI needs to be paying an exorbitant amount of taxes so that they go out of business. But we do need to take stock of where this all went. We do need to sit and say, what is happening here and how can we best go forward with all of our interests in mind, not just a few folks with a few rich sets of technology. Just because you built Facebook 20 years ago doesn't mean that you get to take over the world now. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's normal. And I think that capitalism definitely encourages these kinds of parasitic competitive behaviors, winning at all costs. But now it's time to have a chat about it, right? And so, you know, if you're going to be supporting public infrastructure, just remember every time you punch in a query to ChatGPT, you might be harming the planet. And that's something that, you know, we all have to address. We all have to reconcile with. It's not always clear either. I really like these tools. I think they're the greatest thing that has happened to us since social media. And I think that, you know, it's an amazing thing to be a part of in today's world. It's an amazing tool to have in your hands to do all sorts of things with. But it doesn't come without its drawbacks. And when you're using these tools, you gotta remember that they're taking your information and they're training themselves on it. You're also being completely monetized. You're also being controlled using the same tools. And every time I send money over to OpenAI, I might actually be investing in a future where I can't work. I don't know yet. And that's something that, you know, we need to sit with. We need to understand. We need to adapt, but not sleepwalk. We need to integrate with AI, but not completely surrender to it. So when we think about this overall, my point with this entire episode is that AI is not heaven, but it's also not hell. It's just the mirror we build. And what we do next depends on whether we're still looking to do something about it, whether we're still willing to look at ourselves as well. So when it comes to AI, you really don't need to be terrified, but it does need to be looked at a little bit more seriously. Thanks again for listening to my episode today. If you have anything to add, please throw in some comments below. Otherwise, it's always a pleasure just to know you're listening and you're here with me today. I really appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode.